Hello, we are Angela Benjamin
and David J. Lilly,
and we are both jewellery designer makers who spend every day surrounded by shiny things.
We are both passionate about jewellery
and love learning all we can about jewellery making and sharing what we've learned with you.
Perhaps you're a jewellery lover or creative type, or spend your days at the bench like we do.
Whichever it is, we hope you'll enjoy our sparkling chit-chat, our silly stories, and our thoughts on living a creative and slightly dusty life.
With a few laughs along the way.
You can find our podcasts on all your favourite apps, including, of course, the biggies, Apple, Spotify, and Chrome Podcasts.
So if you want to know who we are and share our passion for all that glitters, then stay with us for the next 30-ish minutes.
This is
Ange
and David with Little Gems on Jewellery
and Life.
It's Ange from Little Gems on Jewellery and Life. Here's part two of my chat with Russell Lounsborough. I hope you enjoy listening as much as I enjoyed recording it. So, Russell, can you tell me what your favourite commission to date has been?
I did a few years ago, working with a designer I met when I was doing some work for Garrard. She got a client that did this Isis pendant, probably about maybe 2 inches diameter. I was quite reluctant to let that one go. It was one of those really fantastic, deep focus jobs. Right. I expect to take 2 days. By the end of the first day, I'd completed it. I just got so deeply into it, it felt like 5 minutes work doing it. It really came together really nicely. Beautiful feathering and the pattern on her dress and everything. Yeah, I really enjoyed that one.
The other thing that you can't divulge, is this because they've gone to famous people or celebrities or royalty?
No, I have like non-disclosure agreements with several clients. So I can't discuss much about them. But it's not my greatest piece of work. See if we can get it visible on the camera. Maybe it's better if I hold him like that. Put my hand behind it. Oh, yeah, you can see him better now. It's a hermit elephant. Half hermit crab, half elephant. It's based on a drawing by an artist called Patrick Woodruff, one of my favourite artists. And I made that to persuade a girl to go on a date with me.
Is that because you knew she'd like it?
I give you a hermit elephant when you go on a date with me. And at first she thought it was a euphemism. But I said, no, it's actually based on this art thing by an artist called Patrick Woodruff. And later on, I actually contacted Patrick Woodruff. And would you like one as well? So I've made a few of them now. I don't sell them. I just give them to people that I like.
And what did Patrick Woodruff think of it? That must have been a real...
Loved it, actually. He used it in a poster for an exhibition that he did. Wow. He's not alive anymore, unfortunately. That was great, communicating with him and him liking something I'd done but been inspired by him. Yeah. It was a similar thing. Although I never actually communicated with this particular artist. When I was a kid, I used to look through my brother's record collection, and he had a copy of Captain Fantastic and the Brown Dirt Cowboy by Elton John, which has quite an amazing cover done by Alan Aldridge. And about 15 years ago, I worked on a collection of Zodiac jewellery, a jeweller that's now quite a household name, but I won't mention. But I did all the design work for it, as well as sculpting all the pieces. And she commissioned an artist to turn drawings that I'd done into a set of tarot cards. And the artist she commissioned was Alan Aldridge. So went from him inspiring me, that set me on this path to like being fascinated by weird art. And then later on, he used my artwork to create a set of tarot cards as a catalogue for this collection.
That's a real coup to have two of the people that you admire actually then use your pieces for their promotional work.
Yeah, I feel quite privileged to have that. What are the chances?
Exactly. That's really nice. So are there any materials that you'd like to make jewellery from that you haven't used yet?
Not really, no. I mean, I'm not really into all these, like, I find some bizarre material that I'm going to use that I feel like that's really just using a material to draw attention to yourself rather than developing a skill. I would like to have a go at stone carving, but it's not a burning desire. It just feels like something else. I should have a crack at carving as well while I'm at it. My favourite material is a new designer. Whenever I start working with a new designer, they can always start going, is it possible to do this? And then I can make it possible, and a whole lot of other stuff as well. I really love opening up new worlds of possibility when I start working with a new designer. Brilliant. Not just in terms of what wax can do, what I can do, but over the years I've worked with so many designers in so many different styles that I can often see a potential of a designer that they can't even see themselves. I really enjoy empowering people and helping them achieve their full potential.
So is that one of the reasons why you teach them? Would you say
it is? Yeah, it is. I like teaching for a couple of reasons. One is, as we've just stated, another one is I really enjoy seeing people discovering some kind of power for themselves when they start making things. And also, when I was learning stuff, every new thing I learned was a fantastic discovery, and I got a lot of pleasure out of that. And I see it in the people that I'm teaching, and I really enjoy experiencing that all over again through somebody else.
I totally get that, because as I said, I've been doing some of your courses, and although I've worked with wax before, it's on a very simple level. But initially I found it quite restrictive but I think that was based on my lack of skill, not knowing what I could get out of it. But through practicing and doing more things with it, I can now see the potential, particularly for
enjoyed teaching you and pushing you to do a few things that you wouldn't have done had I not to do them.
Exactly.
Something I've been very lucky with over the years, that I've worked with a lot of designers who want to do stuff that they can't quite find anyone else to do. And when I've started doing them, I don't know whether I can do them or not either.
So
I've been stretched through that. And a lot of people don't have that because they're only pushing themselves. And so when I am teaching something, I see someone's doing something, I see a lot of potential they can do with it. I like pushing them in that direction to see if I can get them to discover more for themselves and discover how to push themselves, so that even at some point, perhaps in the future, when I'm not teaching them, they will continue to experiment and push themselves into areas rather than just staying in their comfort zone the whole time. You know, some people just do.
And I think that is a skill of a teacher as well, not only being to convey, okay, this is how you make it, this is how you carve something wax, for example, but also sussing out someone has a certain leaning towards doing something a certain way, and not just shutting it down and saying, oh, actually, no, you can't do it like that, you've got to do it like this, but actually getting them to sort of wheedle out their own style, for want of a better. So when you're in your studio, do you listen to anything?
I don't know whether you could hear that, but I do listen to an awful lot of emergency vehicles going past.
Well, I've had a wasp in here, so I might need one of your emergency vehicles.
I listen to a lot of music, all kinds, a lot of 60s and 70s rock, psychedelia, punk, folk, ska, indie, mod, world, grunge, electronica. I like soundtracks. I've got a lot of very alternative tastes, a lot kind of weird fusions and interesting covers.
Any soundtrack? Give me a soundtrack. Because like you said, you mentioned that. What soundtrack?
Okay, great soundtrack is the soundtrack to Big Lebowski. That's got
a great film. Yeah.
I kind of first got into soundtracks when a friend of mine bought the soundtrack to Pulp Fiction. And I thought, I love this like collection of songs, and particularly when they stick a little bit of dialogue in there as well. Danny and I often quote film dialogue at each other, but just as a form of communication in the workshop. And it's one of the things I miss there, not sharing a workshop with each other. You know, things from what is it? Shaun of the Dead, like saying, don't scratch it. That's something we do all the time. Just completely random.
But quite relevant as jewellers. Yes. Excellent. Yeah. So do you ever work in silence? So if you've gotten this zen zone where you're really concentrating, you're enjoying the flow of the work, would you still have music on, or do you like to have
probably that? It just forms this kind of background noise that's far more pleasurable than the sound of traffic outside my flat. You know, lately I've kind of got into listening to some lectures on YouTube as well, actually. A bit of history, some archaeology. I like a bit of philosophy and psychology and mythology lectures. And I like a bit of anthropology as well. So, yeah, I do like a few.
Quite a mix, yeah.
I have started listening to your podcasts since
You don't have to say that, but you've at least got to listen to this one. But thank you for saying that.
I do need to get some earphones, though, because it's a little bit quiet for working.
Yes.
The only thing.
No, definitely.
any noise at all, just and suddenly I'm losing track of what you're saying. So yeah. One of the reasons why I don't listen to audiobooks, because I find I kept having to go back and rewind stuff because I kept missing bits.
Same. I either like music or a good podcast. But yeah, I'm always interested to what other music people listen to. And soundtracks is one I've never thought of, but I do like your soundtrack, so I will fish out the
Bukowski. I made a lot of playlists as well. When I switched over to Spotify, but back when I was using my iPod all the time, you could make playlists on there. So I made a lot of the jewelers playlists. I quite like my Class War playlist. That was a good one.
Yeah. Give me an example of what was on that.
Without looking, I couldn't give you a list of what's on
there.
We'll
have to chat about that one then.
Just send you a list if you like.
That would be brilliant. I'd be really curious.
Put them all on my Spotify now. So all my playlists are on there.
Please share.
My inappropriate speed date music. That was a good one.
Yeah, definitely. I'm going to be hitting you up for some playlists there. So in terms of, aside from music to listen to whilst they're learning, what advice would you give to someone who wants to be a jeweler? Because you had a really unique start, which I'm sure everyone does, but yours was really interesting. What advice would you give?
Okay, well, if you're thinking of self-employment, make sure you really, really want to do this, because you've probably done a class here or there and you've learned a bit and you've enjoyed making some stuff, but it's not all fun and games. There's a lot of paperwork, there's costing. As self-employed, you're going to probably be working longer hours than you ever did when you were employed. There's no sick pay, there's no holiday pay. There's tons and tons of uncertainty and no guaranteed income.
Okay? You're talking to a self-employed physiotherapist / jeweler here. So, yeah, I can totally relate.
Yes. Right. If I haven't put you off already, okay, and I'm doing my best, cultivate a specialist skill. Because if you've got a rare or unusual skill or a highly sought-after skill, you can always use that to support yourself while you're, if your own work's in a bit of a lull or it's a bit of a quiet period or something, setting and engraving and enamelling are always in demand. I mean, I've got a niche skill, wax carving, but with developments in CAD, it's really, I don't think there's enough work around to support many more wax carvers than already exist. And if you're kind of starting out at a lower level of ability, most CAD designers are better than you. Wow. Faster and cheaper. You can stick it out and become more of a sculptor, and you can deliver something that is hard to produce on CAD, which is what I do, but it will take quite a long time to do that. Wax carving has increased in popularity simply because it's a way for people to express themselves, I think. And so it's become very popular for that. But as a specialist skill to sell to the trade, I don't think it has an awful lot of value anymore. Yeah, for an individual artist, loads and loads of value. Tradesmen, not so much. I think it's very useful to join an association, the Institute of Professional Goldsmiths, of which I'm a fellow, and I have been the chairman in the past. The Association of Contemporary Jewellery, these give you a community, they give you discounts, and they give you access to professional advice. The IPG, Institute of Professional Goldsmiths, we now have two WhatsApp groups, a technical chat group, which gives you access to, we have 200 members. We are a real elite organization. So we have some of the best craftspeople in the country. Most of them are quite old, so they don't all use WhatsApp, but we do have a pretty good community of extremely experienced and highly skilled people on there who are able to give advice to people.
And is the Institute of Professional Goldsmiths, is that anyone can join, or you have to be nominated to join it?
Anyone can apply. There's a website, ipgoldsmiths.com, Or you can look us up on Instagram or Facebook or anything like that and just get in touch. Anyone can join if you're in the jewellery trade. Our lowest level is the equivalent of an apprentice, that's a member. The next level is the equivalent of a journeyman, and that is the associate fellow. And the highest level is a fellow. Although we are under discussion to whether we should add an extra level in there somewhere, but that's something we'll be discussing at our AGM on Monday. Okay, another important piece of advice is plan your job. If you fail to plan, you're planning to fail. I mean, really think about what you're doing. Take your idea, draw it, redraw it, sit down, think about it, and have lots of ideas. You know, not every idea you have is going to be great. So come up with 10 ideas. Put them on one side, come back, look at them again, reassess them with fresh eyes and decide which ones you really want to do. If you have 10 ideas, one of them will be a great idea, majority will be okay-ish, and a couple of them will be terrible ideas. But it's important to have lots of ideas because you're more likely to get a good one that way. And as I've said before, get out of your comfort zone. It's the only way to grow.
So do you have a preference in terms of style of jewellery? I think I know the answer to this. From what we've talked about so far, fine jewellery or contemporary?
I don't really have a preference. I think the best and most interesting work kind of occurs on the boundary of both, created by people who are capable of both. Production values of fine jewellery and the kind of imagination that you tend to get in contemporary. You know, if you're going to break the rules, make sure you do it with impeccable skill, I think. But my preference is in terms of style, more towards sort of Art Nouveau, that kind of thing. A lot of deco is really well done, but the clinicalness of it leaves me cold. Well, I like to see an exercise of skill, but I'll forgive mistakes if there's some great imagination there.
And so in terms of your success, and for me, success is judged on lots of levels, but what do you think is the skill that's brought you where you are now?
My specialist skill, wax carving. I discovered it when I was at Central St Martin's. Like as I said much earlier, when I was doing my seat in guilds, it seemed like there was a missing piece, being able to make the kind of jewellery that I admired. So when I went to Central St Martin's, they kind of went, oh, this is some wax here. And this is, if you get some raising rod and hammer the ends and file them up a little bit, you've got some carving tools. And then they left us to it. But it was a game changer. It enabled me to make the kind of figurative jewellery that I admired and that I wanted to make. And of course, you know, as I continued to practice it, other people wanted that skill and what I could do. Quite early on, there was a guy that was making replicas of Robert Houdin mystery clocks from, I guess they're probably mid-19th century, and that's covered in Baroque artwork of cherubs and acanthus leaves and stuff, and he gave me these pictures to work from, you know, like bad photocopies from books. And I said, yeah, I'll do that. And I thought, no idea how I'm going to do this. It's way my abilities. But I sat down and I did them, and that pushed me out of my comfort zone. And on account of that, him getting those pieces cast, that casters saw what I was capable of and recommended me to more people. So, yeah, I pushed myself to a high level of ability quite quickly and continued to do that. In terms of something that's completely unique, what I have isn't a unique skill, but I have over the years developed a method of making vulcanized rubber molds of very delicate items and cutting the pieces out of the molds intact. Wow. The kind of stuff that most casters will tell you is impossible.
Well,
and then they'll tell you to get a cold mold made. Wow. But I've figured out how to do it, and I think it's fairly unique.
So is that something you'd use for the commission pieces that you work on?
Yeah, for my clients, yeah.
And a final question. It seems like a bit of an anti-climax question, but what would you say you're not good at?
Self-promotion. I'm terrible at self-promotion. I'd like to go around telling people how amazing I am, but I just can't do it. I've always been really terrible at it. I find it very difficult to write things about myself on my website and that kind of stuff. I read things that other people do, and I just think, how can you say that about yourself and not feel, oh my God, I'm so conceited? You know,
I know what you mean. I chatted to a few people who talk about, you know, business promotion and ways to do it. And, you know, it's something they've said to me and something they recommend. And they said, you know, you've got to be able to blow your own trumpet. But I always find it, excuse the phrase, a bit wanky. It's just not something that comes, it makes me cringe. But if we don't do it, who else is going to do it for you? That's you know, your work speaks for itself. But I feel your pain with that one.
I've always been happy to let my work speak for itself, but a lot of the times it doesn't speak quite loudly enough.
Exactly. Yeah. And so the other advice I was given was just get over yourself and do it. So, and you kind of got, I was told, you've got to think, what's the worst that can happen if you put out a wanky statement?
Yeah, some of them really are very, very wanky these days.
I'm wondering if David's going to edit out all our wankiness here, but I think it's the only word that works for me. That's the description.
There's a whole art school language which is now applied to sort of what's now called mission statements, but it's got, you know, it used to be just like student statements or artist statement. And you read some of this stuff and about, you know, it's about my relationship with space and dairy products or something, you know. And you think like, what are you talking about? I mean, how is this piece of bent metal here connected to anything like that? I find that quite bizarre. It's almost like they've got to construct a quite opaque form of language to hide the fact that probably not an awful lot there.
Sort of fluffing out, padding out the what the viewer's looking at. But I think your work definitely speaks for itself. But I feel your pain in terms of the being able to blow your own trumpet. But it's if that's the only sort of failing that you have, that's not bad considering the longevity of your career and where it's got you so far.
I'd like to be better at engraving, actually. A lot of the work that really impresses me these days is engraving.
Is that on your list of something that you want to work on? Or
on a list of something that I'd maybe like to work on, but I know that my time is just going to be consumed by clients wanting things.
You've got that owl to finish.
Yeah, I've got to finish that owl as well. And probably a dozen other things. And I've got to write another book.
Well, on that note, Russell, I'm going to say thank you very much for your patience. We've had a couple of little interruptions, but it's been really brilliant chatting to you. I hope you've enjoyed it, because I really have. It's been great. We will put all of your relevant contact details, your website and your Instagram, which I hope to see with a wanky statement on it about how great you are. And I will see you again soon. What was that?
I could probably use that statement.
I look forward to reading that. Brilliant. It's been great chatting, Russell.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed the episode and come back to us another couple of weeks for the next one. In the meantime, also thanks to Alfie Amadeus for the amazing track, Optopi, which is our theme music. See you soon. Bye-bye.